2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos here this morning along with Jerry Goodspeed and Sheridan Hansen. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Guys, Hugh from Orem is wondering about his potatoes. He has brown spots on his potatoes, and he's wondering what those are from, and is there something he can do to prevent them?
I'm guessing they're on the leaves, not the potatoes.
Not on the potatoes themselves, I would think. I mean, it's a little early to be really harvesting much.
Potatoes. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had a lot of rain events this spring, so we've stayed kind of nice and wet, I guess you would say. So that can sometimes bring some fungal pathogens, something like early blight. Sometimes
which is pretty common.
Really common, especially when we have moisture. So it's a fungal infection that can cause some problems with your potatoes. So sometimes those leaves will just drop and you want to clean them up. Remove those one leaves that maybe have that problem on them if it's not really extensive. There's some fungicide applications that you can do. Just a general fungicide will take care of that and keep it from spreading to the rest of your potato plants.
Right. The next texter was asking a similar question. They say their potato plants were doing so well. They had pretty blossoms on them. And then suddenly they were just chewed right off. And they were just wondering if they're going to get potatoes.
Yeah. You know, as long as there's still some leaves there, you'll probably get potatoes. You know, once we see the blossoms, we know that those tubers are starting to form. We have what you would call baby potatoes at that point, and we can do what we call robbing. So you get those young, new baby potatoes that you would take from the hill. So there should be some tuber formation. I mean, as long as there's leaves, it can photosynthesize and continue to produce those.
So don't lose hope.
Yeah, don't lose hope. Not yet.
Okay. Let's take our next caller, Don in Alpine. And good morning, Don. What is your question this morning?
Yes, I have a apple tree that's probably at least between 20 and 30 years old that is been dying. Certain limbs have been dying for about maybe 5 years. So my question is, when should I cut the dead limbs off? Does it make any difference what time of the year that I cut those dead limbs?
No, you can do that whenever you want. I always tell people if it's dead, it doesn't matter. It's not going to affect the tree at all.
Okay.
So you can remove those whenever you want to.
The second question is, it's a really, really good tasting apple. I don't even know what kind it is, but is there some way to start another apple tree from, you know, this tree? There are some good limbs on this tree, but I think they're all going to probably eventually die.
So, yes, you can graft it or bud it. We actually hold, we didn't this year because of the pandemic, but normally in the spring, we actually hold grafting classes where you can bring in what we call scion wood. In other words, what you'll do is you'll go out there in February and you'll cut some branches and then you'll clean them up, store them in the fridge is what I do, a little bit of moisture. And then when we have our class, you can bring those. We'll have rootstocks that you can graft those onto. And we've got a Mike Pace up in Box Elder County is really good at it, and he'll teach you how to do it so that you get pretty good survival rate, and then you'll have your tree.
And we do teach budding classes, too, and that's taught later in the year, but I don't know if it's happening this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's usually end of July, August.
And those are usually taught down in Utah County with
COVID is ruining our lives.
I know.
It's not ruining our lives, but it sure is disappointing us in a lot of different ways.
So keep your eye out. Go to our website, and it'll talk about the calendar when we have the grafting or budding classes.
Yeah, so I think it's extension.usu.edu/calendar, and you can find our classes there.
Or at the Botanical Center's website as
right,
well.
Right, also.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Thank you, Don, for your question this morning. Our next texter would like some advice on a bush or a perennial that will thrive at the 8,600-foot elevation. They need a suggestion for hiding the 6 feet underneath their deck. So they have that big space, right, and they're trying to cover that up. They tried the Carl Forrester, but the season's too short, and it only grew about a foot high.
Do they want a shrub or do they want a perennial?
They want a bush or a perennial.
So I would go with the shrub, with the bush.
I would too.
Because a perennial is going to die back on you, and you're not going to have get the coverage you want. And at that height, you know, you just my opinion would be to go with something that's more native. There are some service berries, there are some snowberries, there are some junipers.
Right.
It kind of depends on what you want. If you never want to get underneath the deck and you want to hide it, you know, an evergreen would look good.
Definitely.
And there are some junipers that'll do that.
Yeah, and junipers are really well suited to those
and
heights.
And very drought tolerant. So
yeah.
If you want to go with the shrub, as I say, serviceberry is one that I like. There's a couple of them up there.
Thanks, Jerry. The next caller is Connie in Kaysville. And good morning, Connie. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. I have a question about my bleeding hearts. Every time this time of year, they all start going brown and dying back. And I'm wondering, do I have to wait for them to totally go brown before I can cut them off? Or can I cut them off now while they're still green on them?
I wait for them to start to yellow out quite a bit. I don't let them go completely brown, but once a good half of that foliage has started to yellow, I figure the photosynthesis is pretty much done, and I'll take it out at that point.
Okay. And then I have a question about my hosta. I have never had this happen with my hostas before. They're on the shadier side of my house. I have one that is green with kind of a white border around the edge, kind of a medium-sized leaf, and it is starting to just curl up. The edges are turning brown, and it's just curling up. And I'm wondering what could be happening to that hosta.
It sounds like either a water stress problem, either over or under watering, or heat stress. The variegated varieties tend to burn a little bit easier than just the plain old green varieties.
And believe it or not, the problem that I see a lot with hostas is overwatering, because they're in the shade, but we're still watering like we do the lawn that's out in the sun or other things. And what'll happen is you'll start to get a little bit of root rot on them. They actually do like it to be a little bit dry, and then they'll get exactly what Sheridan said. You'll get some heat stress or some dieback on the edges.
And the thing with overwatering versus underwatering, it looks exactly the same. It's so hard to figure out. So just feel around in your soil, feel how wet it is.
And let it smell it too.
Yeah, and let it dry down. So make sure that in between waterings, you're going out, you're checking, and that top inch or two of the soil is drying down really good.
Okay, so we have one of those smart sprinkler things that set up for what is in each area. And right now I'm out here in the garden, and right now that area is really, really dry.
Okay. So maybe you need a little more water.
You need more water.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next texter is wondering the best way to water lawn on a hill. They have a sloping front yard, and every summer they get those large dry spots and end up with, you know, some bare spots in the ground. They wonder if maybe a few more minutes of water would work. But they're saying that usually just runs off into the sidewalk.
Oh,
right?
And that's it. That's exactly right. And that's why quite often what we'll do is, and I have a front yard. It's very small, but it also has a little bit of a slant. I water it, or what you can do is water it maybe 10 minutes until you start to see it run off. Stop watering at that point. Let that water that you just put on it soak in. Maybe it takes an hour or two, and then water it the 10 minutes again. And so you're kind of cycling through, and you're not watering it very long, but you're allowing that 10 minutes of water to soak in, and then wait an hour, or water it again, 10 minutes, wait, water it again. So that's going to be your best way to do it. You're just gradually going to have to water it. Because if you just turn it on for an hour, most of that's just going to run off, and it's not going to help you any at all.
Right.
All right, the number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chalaos with you this morning, and we have given Ton the day off, and that means Jerry Goodspeed and Sheridan Hansen are with me this morning as well. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's take a call from Bob in Cedar Hills, and good morning, Bob. How can we help you this morning?
Last spring, I planted some boxwoods, some fire bushes, and some lilacs, and was told to water them all the same, which was three times a week, about 2 gallons each time. And the others have done fine, but the lilacs were not growing very well and looked like they were sick, so I went online, and it says they should only be watered once a week or something. And so we did that. They improved, and then this spring they don't look good. I've tried to water them more. I've tried to water them less, and I just don't know what to do with them.
Well, it is true that lilacs are very drought tolerant.
They are.
And they don't need a lot of water. That part's true. It's hard for me to, without looking at them and seeing what it looks like, to actually tell you what's going on, whether it's exactly too much water, too less water, or some other problem that it may be as well. Typically what I will tell people with shrubs as they plant them, and whether it's boxwoods or lilacs, is go out and check the soil. Just go out and use your hand, dig down. Don't be afraid to dig down around it and see how moist it is. With your lilacs, they're not going to require as much water. What I would probably – so when you say they're not doing good, are they just not growing? Are they browning? What's going on?
Yeah, they're not growing very well, and they are browning.
The whole plant or just the edges or
– most of the leaves are very light green on the inside and then brown and yellow on the outside.
On the outside. So that usually – to me, when I see that, usually I think of water, a water stress. And that can be caused by too much, too little, like we said earlier.
And soil type can have a lot to do with
that.
So if you have heavy clay soils, you're going to water even less. Sandy soils, a little bit more. That can really play a factor there in your watering schedule, too.
As long as you still got green out there and still are pliable, the plant's still alive. So, boy, without looking at it, it's really hard. But what I will tell you is just make sure that the moisture is
My wife
is
took
consistent.
Some pictures into a local nursery, and they said they needed more water. And I checked the soil, and it looks pretty dry. But I'm just, everything says that you don't want to overwater them, so I've been really reluctant.
My own opinion is, since they're new, I would be watering them once, maybe twice a week.
Yeah.
And that would be it. And when I did water them, I would water more than 2 gallons. I would water them deep. So in other words, I'd want to make sure that that soil profile has enough water in it. And if you have sandy or clay soil, it doesn't matter, but I would make sure that that water drips and penetrates the soil about a foot.
Right. And it takes a while for some of these perennials to establish too. So, I mean, you planted it last year. So it's going to take a few years to really get a good established root system on it. It's working on it, but you may have to boo-boo it a little bit.
That deep watering. Frequent. And that's what I would try.
Okay. Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right, Bob, thanks for your call this morning. Thanks. Next texter is asking about a Bing cherry tree that they bought this spring from a local nursery. It had buds but no leaves. They were told that it was still dormant and would be leafing out in a few weeks. Now it's still not leafed out, and they're wondering if it's time to take it back.
Yeah, if you've planted it, you've given it water and done all the things, I would take it back if it still hasn't leafed out. It should be leafed out by now. So
yeah, it should. And you can also test it by bending a branch if it snaps.
If it snaps, it's dry and dead, then you know you've lost that tree. But yeah, it should be leafed out by now. In fact, it should be working on making buds for next year
right about now.
Yeah, if it's a real concern if it doesn't have leaves.
Sounds like it's time. Okay, Brad is calling from Bountiful. Good morning, Brad. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning, Sheridan, everybody. Thank you very much for taking my call. Sheridan, I've sent you a few emails in the past.
Have you? Oh, hey. Well, good.
So what's going on, Brad?
You're awesome. Okay, so I have a couple of rows of Sharon, three of them. I sent you a text, so you'll be able to see the pictures. The middle one, which is the short guy, seems to be just having a good time blossoming. The other two, they're really green. They've got lots of buds, but the buds are turning yellow, dropping off. So I tried Tree Feast. You know, I've tried putting in like a 16-16-16 slow-release granular at the base of the tree. A month ago, I sprayed everything for aphids because I had aphids and that sort of thing. But I'm not getting anything.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a few things. I mean, where they're right next to each other, I would think that they're not overly shaded, right?
It's
on the east side of the lot, and they don't get sun until probably midday.
Okay, and about how many hours do they have sun?
Six, seven.
Are they all the same variety?
Same variety, different colors.
That's what I mean.
Okay, yeah.
So sometimes what I've seen is there are some varieties that just don't do as well. And with a little bit of shade, there are some varieties that just don't bloom very well.
Right.
Especially in the heat, too. That can be another problem.
The heat can definitely be a factor. It just may be too hot for that plant to support bloom. It takes a lot of water to support bloom in a plant.
Especially those hibiscus.
Yeah. So it may, it could be a combination of things there. That variety, the heat, maybe a little bit of shade. It's a tough one.
Yeah, there's no insects that I know of that'll do that. There's no diseases that I know of on a hibiscus that'll just drop the blooms that I know of. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but usually when I hear that, I think of either the variety, the heat, the shade, or a combination of all of that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to try a little more water and see if that helps. And if not, then we'll rethink it. Thank you very much.
Or replant. Yep.
Yeah, replant with something else if it's not going to bloom, not going to do it for you. So, yeah.
Right. Right. Okay. Thanks again.
Thanks, Brad.
Bye. Thanks, Brad, for your call. Next texter asking, how do they get rid of segment grass?
Segment grass. I'm wondering if they're talking about horse grass. Yeah. That's a tough one to get rid of. It likes moisture. So one of the things we found that really helps is, reducing the moisture in that area will help to drive it out. What else, Jerry?
Well, the only thing that we've really found is just be consistent with removing it. It's got a deep root system. It's rhizomatous, and so it'll just move and it'll creep up. If it's an area where there are not other plants, then a real good pre-emergent will a year-long pre-emergent, not a preem or something, but something that's a real good pre-emergent will help. But again, it's like field bindweed. You just have to keep at it.
You have to keep
removing it. The problem with it is it doesn't react very well with some of your non-selective herbicides. So sometimes the good, really good pre-emergence help. But again, I wish there was an easy cure. I mean, I hear people all the time say, well, what can I put down that it doesn't ever come back? Well, that would be cement. That doesn't even work sometimes.
I've seen it come up through the cracks in cement.
That doesn't even work.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
So you just have to keep at it.
All right. This is coming from Barry, who's in Perry in northern Utah. He says he's also seeing a white powdery substance a few inches under the surface of the soil, and he's wondering what that might be and if it's harmful and how do they get rid of it?
So I'm thinking it's just a fungus that's decomposing some organic matter there. It's usually not harmful. It's actually kind of a beneficial thing because as it decomposes that organic matter, it makes it plant available usually. So you're putting nutrients into the soil.
So there was something there, the organic that is decomposing.
Yeah, either wood chips or roots or something.
Something.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to take a break for the top of the hour news. I also want to tell folks, when we come back from that break after the news, we're going to be talking about your lawn, heat stress, and other lawn problems. So make sure you tune in for that as well. And the number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Hey, make sure you check out the Facebook page, the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We always have fun stuff for you there as well. And today we have a segment that I recorded with two nutritionists about fun things, fun facts about herbs and spices in your vegetable garden. So when you get a minute this afternoon and you need something extra to do, take a listen. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.